Iveco is Mr. Carmelo Peluso. Where is that? Right. If you know that you're next, how about coming forward? And then Mr. Ray Kagashaka. Could you pronounce your names for me? Because I know I'm not pronouncing it correct. It is?
The first name is Carmelo Impaluso.
So that was more or less right.
Yeah, and my name is Ray Kashagan.
So this is misspelled here. Right. Thank you very much. You are effectively the head of bus division, of the bus division of Iveco South Africa Works Private Limited, Private, PTY, is it not limited? Is it limited? Private Limited. And then your colleague is the managing director. You are very welcome. Please go ahead with the presentation. As I indicated to the last presenter, he actually had 45 minutes with ourselves in the engagement, but we do want to stick to half an hour, all right?
Thank you very much and good morning to you all. Just a brief overview of our organization, Iveco in South Africa. We have the Iveco assembly plant, which is based in Roslyn, which started in 2014. And that this replaced a lot of the product that was previously being imported and sold into the local market. So Iveco itself imports the CKD for extra heavy trucks and bus chassis from Europe, from Italy, to the plant in Roslyn, Iveco South Africa Works, abbreviated ISAW, which is a 60% shareholding by Iveco South Africa and 40% shareholding by the Larimar Group. The product is then moved through to the commercial company, which is ISA, Iveco South Africa, which is 100% owned by Iveco SPA. We produce extra heavy commercial vehicles and buses in Roslyn, and we import the daily van product and convert that locally from a van into various specialized applications, be it ambulances, passenger vehicles, recreational vehicles or vans for freight. That's just a brief look at the Iveco organization in South Africa. We go straight into the questions as were raised in the letter, and the question number one was, are you able to meet local content requirements and how are you doing it? Well, Iveco is able to meet the local content requirements using the calculation in accordance with the SAB's approved technical specification, SATS 1286, and the formula as provided in that specification. Iveco is able to meet the minimum requirements, and we achieve more than the 80% threshold. The costing department at Iveco, together with manufacturing, use various software systems to closely monitor our material usage, the labor input, the material costs, and local content values. The entire bus body is manufactured and built in the Roslyn plant based in Tshwane, and we employ a local labor force from the immediate area surrounding Roslyn, which is Shoshanguve, Harankua, etc. Our manufacturing line is not automated so that we maximize any job creation opportunities. And let me state there and say that the job creation opportunities are mainly related to the bus bodywork, which is labor intensive, and as an indication to you, to assemble a truck chassis is about 10% of the labor content of building a complete bus body. So the bus body is really the focus for job creation. The relevant Iveco personnel attend various briefing sessions and training on local content calculations. And we communicate with the staff of the DTI when we have questions or concerns relating to any issues that we require clarity on. The local content calculation of what we call our freeway commuter bus is detailed on the next slide. And you can see that we look at a breakdown of the complete bus in terms of local content for body material, for body transformation, that's converting the material into an end product, local body optional extra items, and then we also have a small percentage of imported body material and imported body optional extra items. What looks on the right of that slide, you will see that if we just separate the body material only away from the chassis, we end up with an 88% local content for the bus body, which is in excess of the expectation or threshold of 80%. We are working at this continuously to the 12%, which is still an imported content, and seeing where we can find opportunities to localize that by developing suppliers for that equipment. And a lot of that equipment is used by other body manufacturers as well. So as an industry, we could see volume related, obviously, whether it justifies the investment to localize it. On the next slide is question two. How do we ensure that our suppliers are meeting local content requirements? Our local vendors actually submit data to our finance division with local content and important content value, and all materials supplied to our, for all the materials supplied to our production plant. This data is collated and tracked for accurate calculation of local content. Where local content is deemed low, we engage with the vendor to establish what their constraints are and possible solutions to increasing local content. Our supplier quality department regularly verifies the information by visiting the suppliers and doing visual inspections, and we are in the process of implementing external audits to ensure accuracy of supplier information. Just as an interjection there, we have been going since the middle of 2014, so we're a growing new company on the block, and we are in the process of doing more and more with local suppliers and local supplier development. Moving on to question three, the Iveco Supplier Development Project. We have selected our high-value procurement items, and we've outsourced consultants to focus on supplier development projects from February to December each year. This started in 2017. I'll go into some detail of that. We use the CNHI, which stands for Case New Holland Industrial. That's our group we belong in. Quality standards and procedures, and we set KPI targets for these suppliers to meet. And we focus action plans based on any gap analysis that we identify. So the first wave of this started in 2017, where 10 suppliers were selected. This is the top 10. And this involved various components, rubber seals, wire harnesses, steel frames and brackets, glass reinforced fiber, paint, seats, windows. In 2018, the second wave was commenced this month with 8 key suppliers. Again, we are identifying the high value suppliers. Again, there's rubber extrusions involved electrical fixtures and fittings, the pneumatic systems, alternate seat suppliers, and rotor molding for plastic components. So in 2017, we covered 50% by value of the Iveco supply base, and another 15% will be addressed in 2018, which will cover 65% by value of our suppliers. So we work very, very closely with our suppliers and encourage them to improve on any areas we identify of where we can localize further. The fourth question is challenges with the local content compliance. And as a bit of background, I just want to set the scene a bit about the bus market in South Africa. The South African passenger transport industry is where the buses fit into. And as we may be or may not be aware of, 80% of South Africa's population is totally reliant on the use of public transport. And this is by buses, by taxis, by rail, etc. The current subsidized passenger transport contracts issued by the Department of Transport and by provincial authorities and sometimes city authorities are mainly being run on a month-to-month basis. And the government is planning on introducing longer-term contracts on a 7-year basis, renewable for possibly a further five years. And this initiative has started to a limited extent in KwaZulu-Natal, around the Richards Bay and Mangeni area. It's also government strategy to allocate 30 to 40% of the current contracts to SMME operators to encourage new entrants into the market, previous small and micro enterprises, taxi operators, as was mentioned by one of our colleagues earlier, into the bus market. And the 7-year contracts obviously would give the operators a lot more confidence to buy new buses. At the moment, the bus fleet in South Africa, the total bus fleet, it totals about 26,000 buses. And as you saw earlier from other presentations, eThekwini last renewed 8 years ago. And a lot of companies have not renewed their fleets, privately owned companies, because it's very, very difficult to obtain funding and financing from the financial institutions if you're operating on a month-to-month contract. So there is a lot of work to be done where we can stimulate and boost the bus industry and the bus manufacturing industry by addressing the subsidy issue, the subsidized contract issue through the Department of Transport. Mines, personnel and scholar transport contracts are also now in the main being awarded to SMME operators, which is very, very good. And we face some challenges which we are addressing as a supplier to the industry with the new entrance into the bus market, but they're not challenges that we can't overcome. Just for information, the main segments of the bus market are for commuters. This is your daily employees, job seekers, shoppers, scholar transport services. We have quite a big market in special hire services. This is weekend travel home, funeral parties or funeral groups, I should say, church groups, etc. Intercity services form a vital part of mobility for the population between the major cities in our country. And not only the major cities, but you will find that they operate even from some rural towns into the major cities on a scheduled basis. Cross-border travel, I don't know if you have observed any of the buses that travel up on the N1 to Polokwane and beyond into Zimbabwe, and on the N4 going into Mozambique, the big trailers that are towed behind these buses. These are people going home, people who have come into South Africa to do shopping and taking goods home, and hence the towing of the big trailers. And city bus and BRT services, this has been touched on by Patricolo earlier. This is inner city services, again for employees, job seekers, shoppers, etc. And then we have a very vital but a small component, which is tour charter. This is the tourism industry buses that are taking groups of tourists around the country and on local tours. So that is the bus market in a nutshell as we see it. But if we focus on the commuter bus market, this is where 75% of the total buses sold in South Africa are for commuter, as we term them, commuter buses. That's in brackets, you'll see 860 of the total market at 1131 in 2017. So, as I said earlier, there are no challenges with meeting the 80% local content threshold in this category if the bus is required on a government tender. It's only on government tenders or state-owned company tenders that you have to comply with the local content of a minimum 80%. Very few of the buses in 2017 and in the few years before that were purchased by state-owned entities. So there were very few government tenders that were issued which encouraged local content to be met at the threshold of 80%. And private operators are currently month-to-month contracts, so that, as I've said earlier, it's resulted in lower fleet renewals and confidence to renew their fleets. If one looks at the BRT and city bus segment, which is the other bigger portion of the total market, This is mainly rear-engined, low-floor, low-entry buses, which is necessitated by the universal access type requirements that people can easily board and de-embark the buses. There have been low volumes in 2017 due to erratic introduction of BRT systems. I think previous speakers have pointed this out, that BRT is not following the planned volumes that have been published, and that there are always delays in putting out the tenders and awarding these. And city bus purchases, similarly, the cities have not had the funding to renew their fleets, and there are very old fleets operating in a lot of our major cities. Local content of bus bodywork is lower than on commuter buses because the requirements of universal access, connection with the BRT stations, requirements for more sophisticated systems than on commuter buses and the passenger information systems, etc. So the focus for local content is really on these two main sectors, which is commuter buses and BRT and city buses. And we would like to put our opinion of how we can stimulate employment opportunities through this local content program. First of all, timelines of tenders. There's a lengthy adjudication period, delays in issuing of tenders, and then very short delivery lead times are required. One of the pains in my career have been the World Cup event in 2010, the Soccer World Cup, which was a brilliant opportunity for buses to be built locally, which we could. And we ended up importing 600 buses. An opportunity lost for great employment opportunity. And that was purely because of a delay in deciding what buses they needed, delay in the tender, and they needed them in 3 or 4 months before the World Cup started, and they had to be fully imported. I think the state-owned entity or state-owned companies of the bus fleets, I mentioned Autopax, Great North Transport, Northwest Transport, and Mayaguya. That is still the state-owned entities that are running their own bus services in their provincial areas. These have not been recapitalized or fleet replacements for a lengthy time. And if you look at those fleets, they are old, they are dangerous. Because of lack of funding, there's been lack of maintenance on them. So a lot of them break down and the passengers don't get to work on time. And I'm saying that operators who enjoy state funding in some format or the other, be it via a subsidy scheme or whatever, should also fall under the rules of purchasing their buses with the local content requirements. It should not just be for government entities buying on government tenders, but private operators who are going to enjoy some form of funding subsidy should also purchase to the same rules. Scholar transport is another area that is painful. If you look at the type of buses that our scholars go to school in, from the rural areas, they are normally the old buses in their third life, 15 to 25 years old, unsafe, unreliable, inefficient in terms of fuel, and of course in terms of emission standards. And why do they operate these old buses? It's because of the tender rate that is paid, or the contract rate that is paid per kilometre, that the successful contractor can only buy cheap second-hand buses. And really, if we want to stimulate the industry and grow job opportunities, we have to revise those tender requirements. I then also go on to say, introduction of preferential purchasing for higher tiers of local content achievement. The threshold in terms of the designated buses is 80% local content. There is no additional incentive or preferential treatment you get given if you get 95%. So you might as well get 80% and you qualify. I think there should be an incentive introduced for higher local content achievements, because that means more job creation. And I'm suggesting tiers of if you hit 90% and if you hit 95%. And then clarification of exempted items from the calculation of local content from the DTI. We should look at this list of exempted items like air conditioners for buses, etc., etc., and see what can we do as an industry with our combined volumes to actually localize those components. We need a clear definition of the chassis CKD kits, especially when it comes now to the low-floor, low-entry buses used for cities and BRT. Because I can tell you now, there is no true CKD of a rear-engine bus. It's SKD, semi-knockdown. And it can be CKD, and it should be defined that way. And finally, I also say we should look at local content parameters for the chassis. At the moment, the regulation says it must be a chassis CKD imported assembled in South Africa. I think we can start with some local content values and start increasing these perhaps on an annual or every 3 years or whatever we decide as an industry. But there are components on the chassis that can be localized. And I mentioned in their batteries, tires, fuel tanks, bracketry, etc. And that would again also stimulate some local job opportunities. So I think a lot can be done, a lot more can be done in terms of increasing local content and increasing job creation through local content. Just some background, I've shown you a 5-year or 6-year evolution of the bus industry. The striking thing is the total market in 2012 was 1,134 and it was 1,131 in 2017. A very static market, no stimulus growth, and yet it's a labor-intensive industry. So I think we need some stimulation of this industry. And the last slide was really just my analysis of the full market and what comprised commuter buses and what was rear-engine city buses. And I thank you very much.
Very much. We're at a disadvantage as members of the committee. We didn't have that in the last two slides, did we? I'm looking at some of you. I understand the presentation came late, but we will get those slides. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. I also did adjust slightly from the presentation that I sent yesterday, a few points. So I think the new presentation is on a memory stick and can be redistributed if you want.
No, we certainly do want. So we would welcome that. Mr. Madima will get that from you, I think, and we'll be able to print copies for members. I must apologise for having to hand over the chair for a short while, but to thank the Honourable von Schalkwyk. Members, this is your opportunity to engage. I'm looking. Honourable Buyani, and that's it. Right. Honourable Buyani.
Thank you very much, Chair. We welcome the presentation, but I wanted the narrative, maybe a brief explanation in terms of bus services vis-à-vis the scholar transport. What are your suggestions in terms of dealing with the matter? Mainly, you indicated that there are dangerous buses, old, and so forth and so forth. Then, secondly, how many downstream local suppliers does the Iveco uses, and what opportunity exists to expand the local content for chassis in South Africa, as you clearly indicated, but please expand so that we get a brief in terms of what is it that the department can assist you in moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to welcome the presentation has been made. You've stressed the fact that there's a lot of old buses that's been used. Can you give us an indication of what you see or what is the lifespan supposed to be of the buses? And also, can you please explain why the definition of chassis CKD is unclear? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I have a couple of questions myself. You may have responded to them during the presentation. What is the size of your employee base, your workforce, number one, and what is the profile, you know, the composition thereof, not only gender, but race as well. That can always come back to us in writing by email. The second question is your shareholders. Can we get an understanding of the shareholders who owns this company? Again, you may have responded to that during the presentation, and I may have missed it. So who owns Iveco, a South African company, and the shareholdings? You know, how is the shareholding made up? The other point, I think you have tried to respond to the sort of semi-knockdown and the complete knockdown, and you're saying it isn't necessary to import semis. That's how I understood you, and we should rather have the complete knockdown. That's how I understood it coming from yourself. Thank you very much. Is that right? I'm looking at the members. Right. Over to you.
Thank you very much. The scholar transport issue, if I can start with giving you an answer to that one. The rates that are paid by Department of Education or the provincial government for scholar transport are very, very low per kilometre. So buying a new bus, let's give a round figure at 1.5 million plus VAT, is unaffordable on the rates that are being paid to the operator. And they are forced to buy a bus of 500,000 rand, which is then the repayments on that make the rate that are being paid per kilometre for transporting scholars affordable. And yet those 500,000 rand buses are very old and unreliable, etc. In terms of our suppliers, the question about downstream suppliers, as I showed on the one slide, we have got, we did our top 10 and we did the next, we're doing the next 8 this year, which is 18 suppliers, which represent 65% of our supplier base. Obviously, as we, that's by value. Obviously, as we dig down, it's become smaller suppliers and the numbers increase. I would rather give you that further analysis without me sitting and guessing in writing, if I could. Local content on chassis, I say that where one has the traditional South African bus of past, the ladder frame chassis, which invariably was based on the technology of a truck without a cab, and then the bus body, easily identifiable, what is the body, what is the chassis. But on the chassis itself, there are areas and components that can be localized. Batteries, fuel tanks, bracketry, etc. And I'm suggesting that local content requirements, job creation, can be enhanced by starting small value, well, percentage-wise of total value, but introducing a local content requirement for chassis assembly in this country and chassis supply. The lifespan of buses, as I said, we've got 26,000 approximately that we lost registrations of buses. In the tender for contract system, and this is a subsidized contract that's issued by the government, the maximum age that is stipulated is 18 years for a bus. 18. Invariably, this is made up of a 12-year life cycle and refurbished for a further 6 years. However, technology is advancing so quickly in terms of emission standards, in terms of fuel efficiency, that it does not make sense economically to run older buses from the previous technology era. And we really should have make up our minds what is the emission standard we want, because really, legally, Euro 2 is all that's required. Yet the cities and that are putting tenders out at Euro 5 and Euro 6 level, which makes sense. So there should be that addressed as well. Rollover compliance, which was a big safety issue on bus manufacture, was introduced some 20 years ago. So buses 20 years and younger are safer than buses 20 years and older because of rollover compliance. And we've seen this in some very bad accidents. But, you know, some of the imported product coming from China, to me, is questionable. in terms of if they comply or not. And but there are authorities at Bureau of Standards, etc., who are responsible for ensuring that it's not my area of expertise. The chassis CKD, sorry if it sounded unclear. What I was saying is that when it comes to the standalone chassis, like a ladder frame chassis based on a truck, it's very clear to define the CKD and the breakdown. But where it's a low entry, low floor, which is a semi-integral bus, you cannot have these loose components as a CKD, and you will find the rear engine and the rear chassis axle module coming in built up already from source. And it's rather an SKD operation. We should be clear to say, does that then qualify under the local content regulations that it must be CKD and locally assembled?
Right.
Or is there a loophole that we have to fill with that SKD if it cannot be broken down further into components?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The other questions we'll reply in writing. The employees, the breakdown of the race and gender, the shareholding. I did cover it briefly, but I think you want a bit more detail. And I think I've covered the questions.
No, thank you very much. You can switch your mic off now. That was a very succinct presentation. And if we can, get that back in writing. Now, while we're making the change over to Volvo, can we have Dr. Makube to respond to the issue that was raised? Honourable Van Schalkwyk.
Chairperson, the presenter just mentioned about the questionability of the quality of the imported material. So I would like to suggest that he put that in a writing, a brief, or elaborate motivation why he thinks that that should be investigated, maybe, the quality of the imported material from China. Thank you.
I think that's a very good point. Thank you very much, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. And I think, Honourable Buyani, you mentioned you still have a number of questions that you could not raise previously, if you'd put that in writing as well. And members, those of you who haven't asked questions sometimes and think of the others, do give them to Mr. Medima in writing. We then come across to Volvo, and the Volvo presenters here is the President, Mr. Christensen, the General Manager of the Bus Division South Africa, Mr. Marius Water. Thank you. If you would go straight ahead.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation and good afternoon. From my side, you know, we will present the company, and then Marius here will then present a little bit the bus side of our operation. Just to start off, Volvo then is a global company. We operate in 180 plus countries. We have 110,000 employees, out of which 1,000 is in South Africa. We have a turnover of 330 billion. And now with the exchange rate improving, it's 571 billion SAR. Let's see, these are the brands we operate with. We have Volvo, we have Volvo Penta, UD, Renault, Mack, Prevost, Novabus, Eicher, SDLG, and also an ownership in Dongfeng. And in South Africa then, we are, let's say, Mini Volvo. We sell Volvo trucks, we sell UD trucks, we sell Volvo buses, chassis, and we are partners then with the previous speakers here, which do the buses. We sell Volvo construction equipment through Babcock, and we do Volvo Penta and sell genset and marine engines. And we also operate a financial wing where we finance trucks and buses and engines. And then we have a lot of shared service here to support the group. In South Africa, then mentioned earlier, we have 1,000 employees. And we have been in the country since 1962. So we actually celebrate 56 years this year. We have a joint Park Distribution Center in Jet Park, where we have our headquarters. We invested 80 million here some years ago, and we do sell the two truck brands, Volvo and UD, and also we do Renault after sales. We have two assembly plants, one in Durban for Volvo truck and Volvo buses, and then we operate a factory in Rosslyn, where we produce UD trucks and also will produce Aisha trucks going forward. The distribution network we are responsible for, we are a regional center here for the group. So we control 13 countries out of South Africa. So we operate in South Africa and 13 surrounding markets that we are responsible for. And we have a dealer network then that service our products. 40 of them are independently owned and service the UD dealer network. And then we have some wholly owned dealers in South Africa for Volvo and Renault, and also some private dealers. The investments we have done lately is to expand our dealer network. We have also introduced a new medium-duty truck for UD last year that we produce in our Rosslyn factory. And a month ago, we took a decision to invest an additional 125 million SAR in a new dealership in Durban. We do a lot of sponsorships. We are engaged heavily in Start for Life, and we support 17 schools with approximately 20,000 students. And the sales we do per annum then is about 2,000 trucks for Volvo, 2,500 for UD. We do about 1,000 used trucks and 1,200 Penta engines, and depend on years and tenders and so on, but plus minus 100 buses. We also sell in our retail operation to over 280,000 hours to take care of our trucks. So that's a company profile a little bit of what we are and what we do. Then just a short one we have for a month ago. We are very proud to be level 4 of the BE scorecard. So we have done some transactions and empowered some people here. For an international company being 100% a daughter company, 100% owned by the mother company in Sweden, the ownership is a difficult element, but we have divested and facilities to a real estate company, and then that's a black-owned real estate company that we then rent back the facilities on a long-term basis for. So we are level 4 now and have 100% recognition level, which has been a significant step for us. Then assembly plant, we do have that in Durban. It was previously in Botswana, and we relocated that in 2006. We bring CKD kits from Sweden, and then we assemble the trucks there. At the moment, this employs 72 people, and we produce up to 10 trucks. So we do produce 10 trucks and plan to increase that per day. And in this facility, we also do the bus production, depending on the orders. And there my colleague Marius will come in and show that a little bit. Our core values then are quality, safety, and environment. And a little bit on the quality side, we are a premium truck and bus producer. Safety is the core value we have, and environment. And attaching it a little bit to the previous speaker, if I could ask this committee to really look into emission levels. I think, you know, looking at the emission levels we have, Euro 2 was mentioned. We are soon in this country the only country in the world that are having that type of emission levels. In Europe we are operating with Euro 6 and others, and seeing, let's say, the old products running around on the road, I think there is a big job to incentivize, let's say, new products in this market, and also not being the last market having the lowest emission standards in the world. I know that it is connected to refinery investments and clean diesel, but I think it's actually an area for really to review and put up some legislation going forward. As a manufacturer, we are ready to produce much cleaner trucks and sell them in this market, of course, but the market needs to be ready as well to accommodate that. Good, that is a little bit a general of the company and what we do. And then I would like to turn over, since this inquiry is more about the bus side of the business, I would like to turn over to my colleague here, Marius.
Thank you, Toby. Just to kick off from our side, Volvo Bus Southern Africa does not own any bodybuilder. What we do is we partner up with the major bodybuilders, which are represented in this forum today. We also support them where it comes to procurement and to give them some sort of development into the Volvo way. What we have provided here is some background on the Volvo plant that we have in Durban, and then we've put in the actual process that we've used on CKD, which was agreed to by the tender committee for tender 138G for vehicles running in Cape Town. You will see the step-by-step process that we have. So first of all, you'd see the delivery of the CKD arriving from port, delivered to the Durban CKD assembly factory. You'd see the unpacking, and you'd see the actual component of what a low-floor chassis would arrive in South Africa. Just as a point, these were the first low floors built for the Southern African market. So we've delivered them for the city of Cape Town and for the city of Tshwane. We did 12-meter low floor units. So to elaborate on step one and two, we've got the valves, nipples, brackets, servo pipes, air tanks, steering gear, pivot arm, wiring harness, routing, nylon pipes, pedal plate, AC breech, battery box, driver's seat and driver's plate. So in steps one and two, you could see all the activities that go according to the CKD agreement and how we process them. Going to steps three and four, we've got the actual docking, which you would see part of the component that is fitted, but totally and entirely separate from the real chassis itself. We have the engine docking, prop shaft connections, engine compressor pipes, AdBlue installed, and as well as the clamping. Moving to steps five and six, we have the coolant pipes, coolant pipe connections, clamping, connection hoses, turntables. So the turntable would then be exclusively to the 18-meter articulated buses and not on the 12 meters at all. Step six, driver platform and electric, central connections, engine cage, and the radiator. So based on the six steps that we have, with step seven, with a fuel tank, today also looking at localizing some of the business, we include the fuel tank into the request from the bodybuilder. So if the bodybuilder has the capability of providing the tank and mounting it with a bracketry, we include that into the body local content. Some of the tanks are, as you can see, the one on the left bottom corner, quite complicated to manufacture, but on these particular buses, the tanks were built locally. And that would give you then a complete CKD program with some of the layout on the plant. Now, as we would have it today, those were probably the last buses we did for CKD, between them and the city of Tshwane. Further to that, that amounted to, it was just under 100 units, and that was built in the region of 4 to 5 years ago. So there we have the current assembly layout as it is, where you could see the buses would be produced on the assembly line. And just coming back to the point, these were the last buses that were built or on a CKD basis on Euro 5 level for cities, being at the city of Cape Town and the city of Tshwane. Since then, no further tenders were out, tenders were published, but tenders weren't really awarded. So, looking at the core business of Volvo, we are experts in commuter city, future electrification, and our core business today, due to the lower volume demand on the city BRT buses, is mainly semi-luxury, long haul. Most of the chassis for this would be fully built up due to the lower demand, and we bring in buses from Brazil, from India. We manufacture local, partially knocked down coaches that we motivate for. Then the bodywork comes from Brazil, and the chassis comes from Sweden, and they are then assembled in South Africa. If you look at the production line as it is, to produce 2 to 3 low floor specialized chassis a week, that could keep up to 38 technicians busy for a week. But as I say, we do not have the consistency to produce ongoing BRT and CKD. Thank you.
Okay, that's a little bit our presentation, and we realize we are not fully in scope of this, the questions you have sent us, but since we are not into bodybuilding ourselves, we have done our best to present our company and what we do, and we are here as a long-term partner to South Africa and really would like to achieve a lot more jobs and whatever we can do to support the initiatives. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that brief presentation. And I notice here that you do have an extra person with you, that we didn't have the name originally with us, but now we do. And that is a director, legal and risk with Volvo, and that is Miss Alida Liebenberg. Right, thank you. Well, it's over to all of us, and just before I forget this, Dr. Makube will come after this presentation to respond to something that is of value to all the presenters and ourselves. But we would like all of the presenters here, if we didn't ask the question, they should note that we want a breakdown of the ownership, the directors, and the profile of the workforce. That's from everyone sitting here. All right, all the presenters, so we get some kind of clear understanding. We would also like a copy of your BBBE certificate, so that also, to some degree, would substantiate issues. Now, I was just going to welcome the visitors at the top, but I haven't yet received anything on my cell, and so I happen simply to know that the person who's leading that delegation is the head of the South African National Ballet, but he may wish to give us his clear title and the name of his visitors.
Good morning, everybody. We are from the South African International Ballet Competition, and we have guest judges from South Africa, from China, from Latvia, from the United States of America, from South Korea, from Cuba and Portugal, from Germany, and then from South Africa. And we are currently busy with the South African International Ballet Competition taking place at our State Theatre with entries from all over South Africa and the world. Thank you very much.
No doubt you're using vehicle services, which may include a bus. We are dealing with localization. This is the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. It's a multi-party portfolio of all the parties in Parliament, and we are focusing on localization of the content, and that is to add value, create more jobs, and grow the economy. So today we have manufacturers from the bus sector or the large vehicle sector. Thank you. A far cry, I know, from ballet, but no doubt they also have an interest in the arts. Right, members, over to you. Honourable Buyani. Honourable Montash. Right.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think I saw a BE certificate here. Yeah, and it talks of 16.99% black owned. I'm not so sure the rest of the percent, where are they? But they will clarify, as you said, they must indicate. And also a profile of all companies that they work with their BE status as well, triple BE status, so that we know exactly how they assist in the process. Question will be, what opportunities to expand local content for chases in South Africa? And also, what are your plans in terms of developing local suppliers and assisting Volvo in this regard? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Buyani. Honourable Montash, followed by Honourable Bansculpe.
Volvo, in their presentation on the slides where they talk about challenges, they say there's no government incentive for purchasing bus parts locally. And I would pose a question, is there any for buying outside the country? I also want to be clarified.
Speak louder into the mic, sorry, Honourable Montash.
My voice may be too soft. I was saying, in your slide where you highlighting the challenges, you talk about there's no incentives for buying local parts. And I was asking, is there any incentive when you buy outside the country, when you import? Can you clarify that for me?
Is that clear? In other words, you said there are no incentives here. Are there, as I understand it, incentives in other countries where you are purchasing from?
I'm not sure. We have not said.
I'm saying, Chairperson, on the slide when you highlight challenges, you say there are no government incentives for purchasing bus parts locally, like APDP. Is that so? I want to check all the presenters that have presented are talking about buying local is expensive than importing. Can they explain this notion to me? I don't understand it. Because in my small mind, I know that our currency is not equal to the value of the international currencies. What makes the difference? What is it that is beneficial in importing than to buy local?
That's very clear. Honourable Van Skalkbeek.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, on the BE certificate, it's indicated that 16.96% is black ownership and 8.56% is a black women ownership. So I want to know, what is the participation level of these black owners in the company or in the operations of the company? And also, what is the percentage of staff members who are South African citizens occupying senior and middle management positions? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. Now, I have a couple of questions. Right at the beginning, I think is that the President said the environment, you know, you were describing how clean, you know, I don't know, the petrol is consumption and everything and so on and so forth. And I understood you saying, you didn't use these words possibly, but that South Africans don't really have an appetite for that yet. I understood that to mean we're not really interested in buying these environment-friendly vehicles. That's what I understood. Perhaps you will clarify that for me. You have already been asked issues about the breakdown of the workforce and that kind of thing. But somewhere along here, there was an indication that demand for your vehicles had declined. You were not really winning. There were tenders out there, but you were not generally the successful bidder. That's how I understood. Now, I was a little bit surprised because I understand you have a broader market than South Africa. You actually have a Southern Africa, if not the continental market, as it were. So perhaps you can explain that, because I would have thought that as the decline occurred here in South Africa, you would develop, you know, the appetite for the vehicle of Volvo, which at one stage every second car was a Volvo in the country. So perhaps you could just expand on that, why you cannot grow your market share outside the country, given that there's been a decline here. Are there any other questions or comments? No, do go ahead.
Okay, so I can start then. The BE certificate, you know, we are a 100% international company, and in all the countries we operate, we own 100% of the company ourselves. But in the BE scorecard, we have a 16% black ownership, and that's called asset equivalence. You know, we have divested real estate in the country to a black real estate company, and it's actually the first of its kind. He usually used to own a lot of governmental buildings, but now he has partnered with us, and we have signed a 10-year long agreement to rent the facilities back. And then we can see that as our portion of the assets in the country is equivalent to this score, then the 16%. So that was the only way we as an international company could get ownership points and also transfer some ownership to some other hands, and that's how we have done this deal then, that we have we no longer own all of our facilities, but we rent them from a black-owned real estate company that then has a lot of woman ownership and so on. So that's how that deal was done. And then local content, I can generalize a little bit. I can take some questions and you can come in, Marius, afterwards. I think local content in general, very simply, you know, we try to buy what we can do locally, but it needs to be economically feasible and also be available. But, you know, I've heard mentioned tires, batteries, filters, exhaust systems. Those are fairly easy to start to produce and should be produced locally, but there is actually not a truck tire manufacturer in South Africa, which there should be. And, you know, we put tires onto the trucks, but they are exchanged quite often in a truck lifetime. So those are the obvious components to start with to localize, and they are also needed
by all manufacturers. Then all the other manufacturers have different seats and they have different things. It's very difficult for a world manufacturer that do 1% of the volume in South Africa to open factories for seats in South Africa. You know, it needs to be something that is commonly used and is used by all manufacturers, and then it would make economically feasible for us to set up our own seat factory in South Africa. Will be very expensive, and then the trucks will be more expensive. So I think you need to look at those components that are used by everybody, and we should of course have a tire factory here in South Africa so we can buy locally produced tires. We should of course buy batteries locally, and we buy oil locally, and we buy filters locally. And then you come to the more difficult components, electronics, engines and so on, which is not the same for any truck manufacturer. They are all individually designed and part of our intellectual property, and then they are for the world produced in one place. You know, we do not produce them in the United States or Asia, or, you know, they are produced in one place for the world. And that's the economic of scale. You know, we need to have that. We do produce about 250,000, 300,000 trucks, and we have one engine plant, for instance. We do not have engine plants all over the world. So that was that one. Board composition then is actually, we have a board in South Africa which compromises of myself, my boss in Sweden, and two local South Africans, black South Africans. So we have a board of four people that runs the company. And then we have a management team that we run the company with, and then we have senior managers where we will send you the breakdown, and that's part of the BE scorecard, but we are trying our best to, let's say, employ and promote people, and we have quite a lot of young, very talented people now coming into the organization that we will be able to promote going forward. You know, we have a lot of we employ a lot of people directly from university of that was previously disadvantage that we take in on internships, and we give all kinds of bursaries, because we realize otherwise we are all headhunting between each other. So we want to grow from the bottom and grow a lot of people that we in a year or two or three can hire, and we already see that is of course making an effect on our BE scorecard and employment equity scores. Then the last one I would handle then is Euro 2 here, which is the official regulation. And you know, it's coming to the point where South Africa, together with Middle East, are the only countries having that type of emission rules. All the rest of the world has gone over to Euro 5, Euro 6. And then you all, I would say, if I represent the industry, all manufacturers more or less have technology to reach that type of emission level. What we do not have in South Africa is clean diesel in widely available. And we are, of course, ready. We have sold Euro 5 trucks in this country and buses. But then you need to arrange fuel supply yourself, and you need to arrange AdBlue that you need. So you take on a lot of responsibility as a transporter that you cannot just buy along the road. So it's a combination of vehicle technology and also fuel availability. And those needs to go hand in hand. And, you know, I'm only worried that in South Africa, you know, you don't want to be the last country changing over to the new level of emission standards worldwide. And, you know, we are heavily investing in electrification. So I think we are introducing electrical trucks, buses, hybrid buses and trucks. So a new technology is coming that is more electrified, but also the diesel technology is there to stay for many years. But it needs to, I think, the country and we should really review what emission standards should we have going forward. And when will Euro 5 or Euro 6 be obligatory for new products? The prerequisite is that there is fuel availability. Okay, so then perhaps you can comment, Marius, about the local bus content, please.
Yes. Thank you. We have certain initiatives at this stage today that with any future tenders that have been won, we are already in negotiation and discussion and contractual agreements with local companies that would then be participating in the manufacturing and assembling of BRT or be it municipal or government related work. With that in vision, we will also extend it then to the normal retail business once the final process has been completed. Then on the expansion of the volumes of the Volvo bus business is something that we also have a keen focus on now, which would not only, because of today we play in 35% of the bus market. As Mr. Khashoggi mentioned earlier, 80% of the 1,100 to 1,200 buses that are built annually in South Africa would be the front engine market. Now, today Volvo Bus does not have a front engine bus. We play in the balance of the 20 to 30% that's available with a market share in there of 35% today. Now, we have future plans to come back into the market to expand our market share and widen the scope as well as into the African market, which would have a high demand for our product coming up. I think that's the responses we needed.
Just for the chairman here, our market share, you know, if you look at Volvo...
We turn the mic off there, please.
You know, first, Volvo Cars is not in our stable. So that is, we have the same brand name, but it's actually owned by Geely, a Chinese company. But from the on the truck side, if you look at our market share for Volvo trucks and UD trucks, we are one of the winners in the market and has actually gone from below 10% in market share 2011-12 to having 17-18% for Volvo and 10 for UD trucks. So I would say every fourth or third product, depending on year, is coming from, on the truck side, is coming from Volvo, and that has been quite a success story with the investments we have done and products we have launched. So I would say we are quite happy with the market and our market share.
Very happy with the market share, okay? Very happy. Good. No, look, Volvo, and presented hereby in terms of, is it the truck? My sheet is gone because I asked someone to write their name more clearly. But just to get the names right, it's Mr. Christiansen, the president, and Mr. Boerter, the general manager, and Ms. Liebenberg. Thank you very much for coming here, and if you would let us have these breakdowns. Please, thank you. We will be asking Dr. Kubert to start talking to us as man starts walking across. And man, we are looking at Mr. Claudio Fernandez, Man Automotive Purchasing and Production Material. We are also looking at Mr. Puso, Molefi, Man Automotive, etc., the Human Resource Manager, and Mr. Ashad Hassim, Finance Director. Thank you very much. Now, it's over to yourselves. It is just 2:15. We need to finish at past. Thank you. That's both sides. Please go ahead.
Okay, Chair, thanks. Earlier on, I wanted to clarify some of the assertions that were made by, I think, Mr. Nodad of Basmark, that we, as the DTI officials, we were not supporting his company, you know, and
Well, not Gibbick, no, with the incentives.
With the incentives.
Yes, so let's be very clear. He made it very clear. So just give us a 1 minute response and the rest in writing.
All right. So my colleague Susanna will take it over.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. What BASMAC, in fact, BASMAC went into a major CAPEX spend only in 2011, 2012. Now, during that period, it was before we had an automotive investment scheme for bus and trucks. So, therefore, the scheme couldn't accommodate him, you know, retrospectively, because it only came into effect in 14. We did have a discussion with him on the Black Industrialists program. I think progressively and going forward, there is scope there. However, he's not yet ready to lodge any application at this stage. So we will take that offline and work with him. Thanks.
Thank you very much. But let's get a detailed response, because we all want to know why he didn't qualify after 2012. All right. That's it, but that'll be in writing, Dr. Makube. Now we move across to, I think it's Mr. Fernandes, is it?
Good afternoon, honorable members and Madam Chair. My name is Afshar Assam. I'm the finance director for MAN Automotive in South Africa. I have to apologize and provide sincere apologies for our managing director, Mr. Marcus Geyer, who is unable to attend. The two of us attended a business review meeting with our shareholders in Munich, Germany yesterday. And for me to be here this morning, I had to excuse myself early from the business review meeting to catch the direct flight to Cape Town. So thank you very much. It's a huge honor and privilege to be in Parliament today. Just to start off, in terms of our company structure, so we are part of the Volkswagen stable, and our local company in South Africa comprises of MAN Automotive South Africa, which essentially is responsible for the national sales company in South Africa, together with Sub-Equatorial Africa, which is 12 countries in the African market that we also service. So on the board, it's, as executive directors, it's Marcus Geyer and myself. And we've also got two non-executive directors, Ms. Sarah Lutuli, as well as our Jerome Lagarde, who is our regional head. So in terms of our operations in South Africa, we employ about 850 staff. 150 of them are at our head office in Modderfontein. We have a truck and bus assembly plant in Pinetown, which got about just over 130 staff. And the bulk of our staff component is in the bus body assembly plant, which is in Olifantsfontein, and I'll get to that in a second. We've also got a large parts distribution center based in Isando. And then we also have a dealer network of about 35 dealers, of which we own six of these dealer networks. So six of the large stores are owned by MAN in South Africa. So to give you an idea of the production process for a bus, we receive the kits, we assemble truck bodies and the bus chassis in our plant in Pinetown, of which about 25% of the bus chassis is locally sourced. The other 75% is sourced, we import the parts for that, but we assemble it in Pinetown. Just to give you an indication, to assemble a truck takes about 50 hours, to assemble a bus body takes close to 500 hours. So it's very, very labor intensive, as my colleagues from our competitive companies indicated earlier. From a local spend point of view, we incur spend of 1.3 billion rand with 970 various South African suppliers that's actively trading every day. Bus parts, about approximately 1,400 different kinds of parts goes into a bus body. So it just gives you the indication of the scale of bus body assembly. From a BEE point of view, at the automotive level, we are level 7, similar to the presenter before me, Volvo, we are looking at ownership options, and hopefully that will come on stream very shortly. I think the one key thing that I also need to mention in terms of the codes is, as a multinational company, what is required is policy certainty. We were about to go live with quite an elaborate educational trust scheme. We were about to launch it, and that's when we had the issue in 2016 about whether the trust would qualify or not. For a brief period of time, for 4 days in fact, the rules had changed, and it created incredible concern from our stakeholders in Germany, and we decided to put a halt to that just to get further understanding and clarification in terms of what and how trust would basically qualify for points going forward. So at the retail level, we have a level 5 at our Centurion Truck and Bus dealership, of which we have a 30% ownership. Many of you would know the owners, Southern Palace Investments. One of their entities, 8 Mile Investments, owns 30% of our retail network, of our retail company. So from our what we've done in terms of the education and empowering our the people in South Africa, we have a learnership program whereby we absorb 90% of our learners into our organization. A big focus area in South Africa is obviously education. We see a huge opportunity with engineering skills. Number one is engineering skills gained in automotive is not only unique to automotive, it gives learners an opportunity to expand the skills into other sectors of our economy. We've got a 4-year dual program, which includes a theoretical and practical component. And essentially our organization, just under 10% of all our staff, are learners and proper learners in the sense of getting the skills, getting the requirements for them to be empowered and to be able to continue to contribute to our economy. Another important initiative that we've got is we donate engines and gearboxes to a training college as a socioeconomic development initiative. The reason we do this is, you know, engines and gearboxes are highly technical. To provide it to a technical college gives them a large range of ability to fiddle with it, to investigate it, to gain skills, and it really helps our learners to familiarize themselves with state-of-the-art technology. And then also 8% of our local spend is on exempted micro-enterprises and qualifying small enterprises. We spend about 100 million rand in this with about 100 suppliers. And essentially, if we look at what component the chassis and the body is, a chassis is about 40% of the spend on a bus, and a body is about 40%. So it just gives you an indication. Apologies, the other way around, 60% chassis and 40% body. So just some of our enterprise and supplier development initiatives. We've invested into a local manufacturer. We've provided him with equipment for tube laser cutting to supply steel components. We've also done a 2.4 million rand investment and providing 2 VW trucks to 2 car carriers to provide bus chassis transport from our Pinetown plant to Olifantsfontein. And this was with a level 1 exempted micro enterprise, and then also another investment was a similar amount in investment of 2 MAN trucks to provide fast-moving consumer goods distribution. And these are the examples of the initiatives that we are busy with on a day-to-day basis to improve the supplier base for our components into buses. I'm going to go into a bit of detail in terms of our bus body plant in Olifantsfontein. Please, honourable members and Madam Chair, if you ever find yourself in Johannesburg, it would be great to provide you with a tour of this facility. It employs 198 direct and 35 indirect staff. Many of them have been working with the MAN for many, many years. We're producing 7 different MAN and VW bus body models. for both the rural and city applications. The capacity we have is 1,000 buses per annum. It's quite an impressive plant. Currently, we produce about 450 buses per annum, of which 380 is for the local market. We export about 50 of the buses. 90% of our spend is with local suppliers on the bus bodies, and then 10% of the spend is with 8 international suppliers, or about 28 million rand. And this is for components that are difficult to obtain in South Africa, couplings, bus flooring. And I agree that this is certainly an opportunity to develop this industry further. We've got an in-house design and engineering team. And MAN in Germany decides on the look, and essentially MAN as South Africa designs and develops components that basically suit the South African bus market. So again, just, you know, it's a very labor-intensive application, and it's great that we've got the capability in South Africa. As an OEM, we're one of the few OEMs that have our own local bus assembly plants. So if we look at where we stand in terms with local content, we are able to comply with a minimum of 80% local content with no additional measures. My guess would be that at the moment we're sitting with about 90% of local content in our bus bodies. In terms of the steel parts, 98% of the steel is purchased from local mills. We purchase it from Max Steel, which sources the steel from Columbus Stainless in Middelburg. Steel forms 50% of the complete bus. In terms of our windows, 80% of it is local. We've got a high element of local value add on those. Seats, 85% of that is local. Again, a very labor-intensive process and great for employment. And then fiber and plastic parts, 80% of it is local, and very similar to seats, it's also quite labor-intensive. So when sourcing a component, we require our suppliers to declare the local versus imported content, so we monitor it continuously to ensure that we obtain a maximum amount of local content where possible, and then our suppliers provide us with an anexure C declaration for every tender that is awarded to MAN. So, just in terms of the challenges, and again, I'm not making excuses, I'm explaining to you what the situation is. The price competitiveness of South African suppliers is poor. Local content comes at a cost. Just to give you an example, for a fuel filter, you know, if we produce it in South Africa, it costs 200 rand. The South African supplier makes 30,000 units. If we produce it if we obtain it from the Eurozone, it costs us 70 rand, a significant saving. And it's all a volume game because the supplier in Europe manufactures 500,000 of these fuel filters. Now, to give you an indication, you know, also what we find is our buses from Brazil is about 10 to 20% cheaper than what we source it, than what we can assemble it in South Africa. We've just had a large tender in Mozambique that we've gained. And what the sad part is, we're actually sourcing these buses from Brazil because it's a lot cheaper to do that in Brazil. And I think this is a point that some of the colleagues made earlier, is that bus body assembly receives zero access to APDP. And this is a concern because there's no incentivization. We've got a huge problem in South Africa that we don't have the volumes. The bus market in South Africa is 1,100 units. We've got a large dislocation cost from the key export markets. You know, to export into Africa is quite challenging because there's a lot of dumping that happens there. They have access to used buses. And also what we're finding in South Africa is that there are fully imported buses coming into the market from India and China, which are a lot cheaper than what we can produce it. And what's a saving grace for the South African market is the quality of these Chinese and Indian product is not where it will be, but it will get to that level one day. and we've got a massive challenge coming our way. Also, what we find is regional requirements per municipality, setting up bus plants in each city. I think we need to focus more on a national strategy. Bus tenders require very complex BBBE and local content initiatives. Qualifying the best suited solution for South Africa could take more time than what's been permitted. We receive a bus tender, we need to conclude the tender and submit all documentation in a three-week period. We do require more time for it. And decisions on procurement of buses are still based on the best price. Companies that are excelling on local content in BBBE don't get any additional credit. So it's a numbers game, and localization and BBBE are granted are very important. However, when it comes to tenders, it's the cheapest price wins the tender, and that's what we've experienced in the market. And then to calculate the local content, as I explained earlier, is very complex and administration heavy, and if bus assembly qualified for APDP, this process would be form part of the generic APDP declaration process, and it would make it a lot easier. So in terms of the way forward for MAN in South Africa, what we're suggesting is think the bigger picture, that is the export opportunities. Currently, as one of the earlier presenters indicates, we also import engine blocks from South Africa. We could certainly export more components. We should set trade agreements and framework for export of complete buses into Africa. Incentivize suppliers who export components to the rest of the world. A key point and one that I would request this House to seriously consider is to implement APDP for bus body manufacturers to improve our competitiveness, increase minimum local content requirement to 90%, create more jobs and know-how, invest in the public transport infrastructure. Our bus park in South Africa is incredibly old. It's a hazard in the road, some of these buses. And define a national approach for local content requirements. That's it from my side.
Thank you very much. We do note that you have another person here who should be sitting here.
Ignatius, please join us.
And that is Ignatius Ntwampi, the head of accounting and treasury in the company. Right, members, it's over to ourselves. Honourable Buyani, I'm glad you're wide awake. Yes, anyone else? Honourable Van Skalkwyk, right, that looks like everyone.
Wide awake.
Yes, you are, my friend.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to check my two questions. What you just said, what contributes to a lack of price competitiveness? South African suppliers, as you said. Then the second one is, are there any penalties if a local supplier found not have misrepresented the actual local content, if you do have? And I will also request your good self to provide us with all local companies that they use with their BBBE status and also the profile. I checked here on your presentation, the first page. I saw sale, there's Marcus Managing Director, there's Ashnaz Finance Director, Manager. But when it comes to the sales support, the admin, HOD, there are no names here. And it will be proper for you to provide names, and that clearly indicates as to are you able to have management in terms of race, gender, and equity process. Thanks, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van Skalkwyk.
And Governor Chair, thank you.
No, Honourable Buyani, I mean, you go ahead.
Yeah, I can also pose the very same question that Honourable Mantashe posed earlier on.
in terms of why it's cheap in South Africa, why importing and the exporting part in terms of the part, and what are the solutions? Because we believe as a company we do have solutions that if you can be able to do this, it will assist you rather than going outside and just to develop inside capacity and be able to supply you on there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Couple from my side, I must say your slide 3 and 4, etc., and 5, others can emulate this. Very clearly defined staff in each area where you are located and what they're up to. And then when it comes to the triple BEE scorecard, again, a very explanatory approach to it under the ownership, the management, etc., etc. That's what we want from you. But I was surprised here, I mean, you're full of accountants and financial directors, it seems, that you find this triple BEE very, very complex and not enough time to complete. I thought you would have had some form of little template there, the base, the core of every tender, and just be able to change a few things here and there. But it's so complicated. How many weeks do you need? Thank you.
Great questions, and I think I'll start off with the lack of price competitiveness in terms of the pricing in South Africa.
Yanni, please listen to your response and not someone else.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Essentially, you know, the situation in South Africa is we are a small market. To give you an indication, we're 1% of the global automotive manufacturing in the world. And, I mean, it's an issue about, like I said earlier, it's a volumes game. If I produce one pencil and I produce a million pencils, the pricing is very different. And what happens is a lot of the production plants are more centrally located to the actual markets for production of vehicles is either based in Europe, in China, in India, in the US, close to where the markets for the customers are. So what we find is, you know, the production of certain parts, the production numbers are limited in South Africa. As I indicated, with fuel filters, the price in South Africa is about 200 Rand. And the supplier tells us that, you know what, if you can produce it, if you purchase it from our plant in Europe, it's 70 Rand, and if you purchase it from our local plant, it's 200 Rand because we only produce 70,000 versus 350,000 of that particular part. And that's also due to automation and robotics that they've introduced into these plants in Europe. And it's very competitive there. I loved your question about the solution. And, you know, from a Jesse point of view, and I think that's been the theme of some of the questions earlier, is, you know, give us the rules. You know, we'd love to procure locally, but make it compulsory for everyone. If you make it compulsory, we'll find a way to comply with it. And I think that's the message here, because, you know, for us to procure that part in South Africa, it will bring up the cost of our bus. It will mean that when we have a tender, that tender will basically go to the lowest price. That's been our experience in the market till now. So if you give us the guidelines and the mandate, we can produce that locally. I'm sure we could do that, and we could improve the local content on our bus chassis from 25% to even higher. But it needs to be a level playing field for everyone, and then also create the export opportunities through the APDP, through trade agreements into Africa. That would really help us as well to increase this. Like I indicated, our bus plant in Olifantsfontein has a capacity for 1,000 vehicles. We could increase that, and we could, you know, basically it would make our product a lot cheaper. Again, it's a volumes game, more product, lower cost.
Mike, thank you very much.
And then, sorry, I didn't answer the second question about the penalties. We can certainly implement those with our suppliers. It's something that we haven't done to date. We rely on the integrity of the supplier to provide the relevant information, but that's certainly something that we could definitely implement. And then the last question was about the templates, you know, for these tenders. You know, common sense would tell you that that would be the process. But every municipality that comes out with a tender has got unique requirements and unique information that they need. You know, there's certainly there should be standardization on tenders. It's become really complex. To be honest with you, the amount of documentation that goes into a tender, I've actually instructed our tender department that when it comes to time to sign up a tender, they need to book 2 hours in my diary because there's numerous lever arch files of documents that need to be signed. That's how complex it is. It's unnecessarily complex.
No, thank you very much. I think that point the DTI are taking on board, as well as some of the municipalities, some members representing municipalities who gave us presentations yesterday are here, and I'm sure they're listening to what you have to say. But they also have some challenges with yourselves. We certainly want to do certain things, but perhaps we can only do it almost as a conditionality on an incentive or subsidy. Because, yes, government can, under the World Trade Organization rules, insist that the public sector buys local. But when it comes to the private sector, it cannot. That's why I'm appealing to the patriotism of our manufacturers and localization focus. But also, as you say, when it comes to incentives, etc., one can. But they're old stories. You know, you pay 30 days, you get a bit of a discount. You can easily say, you put in local here, we'll give you a small discount. There are many, many ways of tackling them. You're business people. Come on, be innovative. Think how to actually capture your market. That's the way to do it. I mean, one sees so many glaring loopholes and strategies here this morning. So please, we do appreciate your presentation which you've made here. And as I said, I was very impressed by the way you had detailed a number of issues here. And I feel like sending a copy of those two pages to the rest of everyone. I want everyone to please come back, though, with the issue around the breakdown of directorship, ownership, and the certificate. I think I've made that clear. A breakdown of the workforce, etc., into race and gender. Please. That includes the senior management. Don't just say we got X. And we don't know how many of them are sweeping the floor or sitting in offices somewhere. All right? Now, thank you very much to all of you. Members, I want to thank all of the members sitting here for applying their minds. And many of them are very senior people in their various parties and so on, and others on two committees and so on and so forth. But I also need to remind you that we have handed out the new revised program, and you will see that you've got an unexpected break from trade and industry. We wanted you to fortify yourselves for the time ahead so that tomorrow, the 1st, isn't it? Thursday? Isn't it the 1st?
Yes.
Is it? Yes, it's the 1st of March. So on the 1st of March, Thursday, we're not meeting. I understand there is a sitting in the House. On the 2nd, which is Friday, there is no sitting in the House. And that is reserved to, you know, regain your good health and so on, and so to sleep, to be prepared. There are members like yourselves here, very alert, and we do appreciate your attendance. But for those who were on their way to Mauritius, the Speaker has declined that on the basis of conflict of interest, and we will go into detail about that later. But many of the presenters here said, come and visit our plants, please. And we're going to do that, find some time. Some of them in Cape Town could take an afternoon excursion, as it were, you know, and go down and see these places right here in the Cape, or Atlantis and that kind of thing. When it comes to Johannesburg, Port Elizabeth, or wherever else you were at KZN, that will require a lot more of our paperwork, but we would hope, and I'm looking at the Honourable Alberts, who would love to be back in Gauteng, where he's the leader for his party, am I right? In what comprised the old Transvaal, was it the three republics or something? Now, Honourable Alberts, you know, we will be going there, and one would hope during that time you would join us on the oversight, the same as yourself, Honourable Kachalia. Okay. So those who are in the copyright, I think it is it at 2 o'clock? That is a subcommittee. And any journalist listening, there is a big difference between a committee and a subcommittee. And when you refer to something being done in a subcommittee, be very clear, because no, the chair does not sit there. Conflict of interest. What they do will be brought back to the committee, and we will peruse that. So who's on that copyright? Let's see, apart from the Honourable Tierko, who's just left, it's yourself, Honourable Buyani, is that so? Who else? Honourable Kichalia, is it Honourable MacPherson? You're on there. No, I didn't see. And who else? EFF? She can't sit on everything, I expect. Honourable Alberts, are you popping in and out of the copyright sub?
I'm not aware that I'm formally a member, but I can join and advise. I don't mind doing that.
So like to this afternoon, for example, if you are free for a... Is it this afternoon? No. Oh, this, no wonder people are panicking. Yes, all right. Take it easy. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned till Tuesday, the 6th of March, 9 o'clock. Right? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.